Welcome to another episode of In the Name of Service, a podcast committed to sharing the untold stories of those who selflessly serve. Each episode features an interview with men and women who have been called to a variety of service-focused roles, such as the military, law enforcement, ministry, volunteering, and more. You aren't likely to know the names of the individuals you meet here, but our hope is by the end of our time together, you'll not only know their stories, but possibly be inspired to write your own in some way. Humble in nature, but strong in character, these everyday men and women showcase what it is to truly be a servant. We're glad you're here. Now here's your host, Dr. Barb Thompson.
Welcome to another inspiring episode of the In the Name of Service podcast. I'm so excited that you're here today. I'm so excited that I'm here today. I'm so excited that I have an awesome guest on again this week. And we actually have never met in person, which is something I'm coming to like about this podcast adventure, is that, you know, sometimes the work that you put out there graciously makes you connections that you wouldn't have known otherwise. And I feel blessed in that manner. I feel very grateful to even have the opportunity to speak with Willie today. So I will let Willie tell you, the listener, more about himself. He's going to do a better job than I would. I'll just give you a hint that it is interesting, and we have not had any prior signal intelligence on the podcast before. So if you could just give a quick description of what that is, so they have a better understanding, that might be helpful as well. So Willie, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I'm a man, I'm a new man, who's received Jesus as my Lord and Savior. I'm a husband, a father, and a son. And to be honest, I feel like I spent my first 40 years on this planet, just kind of wandering. But 23 years of it, and a significant part, has been in the Marine Corps. When you talked about SIGINT and electronic warfare, we'd like to call it, we're part of a community of hard nerds. And that's significant because it's such a complex vocation. And to do it well, we have to be shoulder to shoulder with any form of O3 or infantryman, whether it's a soft infantryman, whether it's a straight leg infantryman. To do our job, we're either the front of the stack or the rear of the stack or on the cordon somewhere doing what we do. But yeah, so that's a bit about who I am.
So when you say front of the stack, rear of the stack, for the non-military listener, that means present on the battlefield.
Yes, it means a large part of what we do is present on the battlefield.
Right.
And in the Marine Corps, our big mantra is to hunt our nation's enemies and protect our brothers and sisters. So that's what we did. That's what I did for a long bit. And
What do you think? I know, and you were present, you know, for the last 23 years, you're out now, but for, you know, the beginning of Marine Special Operations and all that kind of stuff. Let's go back early first before we get into the military experience, if that's okay with you. I would love to know, just from your perspective, what early experiences or relationships you believe helped shape you into a person that you are today, but also in light of what you just told us, that you're a new man, like the type of person that could follow after or pursue those difficult roles.
Okay. Wow. Early experiences or relationships. I'll admit that, well, right now I'm learning that our struggles are gifts, right?
Mm.
But it's tough. It's tough to accept that, especially in the moment when you look out on your life and you're like, man, look at all this struggle, look at all this suffering. These are gifts and opportunities that I'm being given to build myself to whatever man that I'm expected to be. So I would say the good and the bad and the ugly are the experiences and relationships that have built me and formed me to who I was. So being a husband, being a father, being a son, and being a brother, great. But also the experiences of, like, when I failed.
Yeah.
And when I constantly sucked at those things have formed me into who I am, and just submitting to that. And then the ugliness, right? When you really learn and see like your pride and your selfishness and your ambition kind of coming up in some ugly moments. Those experiences, those relationships, the broken ones and the good ones have all molded me into the man I am today. So, I mean, man, we can dig on that one and pull the string on that one. But so much. But it's okay. It's definitely okay. So,
yeah. I have some young people around me. I mean, I have kids, of course, but, you know, just people in the community. I'm often talking to people who are younger than I am and, try to give them confidence that it's okay if your life looks like a mess. It's okay if it all looks like struggle when you're looking backwards, because essentially it is preparing you for something great. If that's the belief that you have, you know, if you're willing to let life take you on an adventure. So,
yeah. I mean, there's a point where you have to just accept the mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we could go all the way back when before I joined the Marine Corps, like I was a horrible young man, like as a 16-year-old. I mean, I was like selfish, ungrateful, very prideful young dude. And I thought my life would have looked like something else if you were to ask me then. I mean, even in the Marine Corps, there's multiple points in the Marine Corps where I thought it was going to be somewhere else. Never have I thought the guy from some inner city, West Coast, like, I don't want to call it ghetto, but it was pretty low-key, low income. I was a graffiti artist, kind of pothead, just, I was horrible. I never thought I'd be in the South, praising the Lord, and just loving God in this environment with all the blessings that I have. I mean, there's no way.
Right.
And to think that I have it figured out in the next 5 years, because we all do that. We all create this vision.
We do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. And if we don't have it figured out, that's like somehow a terrible thing. Like, oh gosh, we got to get it figured out.
Yeah, my daughter's 16, going on 17 right now. And she's stressing out. It's her junior year of high school, and she's stressing out that she has to figure it out. So we see it all over the place, definitely.
What did compel you to join the military? We've heard a little bit about, you know, you and your graffiti. Was that on trains or buildings or what? What was your preference?
It was on everything.
Yeah.
It was on everything. I'm sure there was an adventure to it and a rebellious thing to it and a freedom to it. Yeah, I was definitely a delinquent as a young boy. But to say I joined the service to serve would be deceiving myself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, this was pre-9/11. There really wasn't much conflict, at least as far as we knew was going on. But I remember getting into a bit of some conflict with my parents, and my attitude and posture towards them was, I'll show you.
Right.
I can do it all on my own, and I'll owe it all to myself. And I wanted to one-up my dad because he was in the Army. I wanted to one-up him. So, I mean, I'm going to join the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps is really good at filling in those gaps, right, in your heart.
Right.
Super interesting. The Marine Corps recruiters are ruthless, and they're good at getting the answers to the test from you before they even recruit you. They put these cards out, and there's these things that you pick, and you tell them, these are the things I want, and then they just lean in on those things. And I picked all the soft stuff, like pride of belonging, self-confidence, self-reliance, right. Adventure. I didn't pick anything tangible, like education and financial stability. But they hooked me hard, and that's okay. It's just beautiful how life works out, because I've definitely transformed since then, and it was necessary to have those moments.
Absolutely. I was going to say, I don't even think those things are bad. Those are all needs that we have.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, there's a dichotomy with good and bad and it being a good thing, right? Mm. Because now, as a grown man, I'm fighting pride.
Right.
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 Right. Fighting my prideful tensions. I'm fighting my self-reliance instead of just giving it to God. I fight those things now. But those are, you're right, they're good things. But there's some temperance that needs to happen as well.
Yeah. So reflecting, impossible question, by the way, that I'm getting ready to ask you. Because 23 years is a really long time. And I don't want to pretend that it all kind of melts into one experience. I know that it doesn't. I know that you've had a variety of experiences and I'm sure a roller coaster of career up and downs, ups and downs. But when you reflect on your military service, what pops up now, you know, in your mind as being most significant for you?
Wow. I'm going to roll back a little bit and talk about my service because I think there's some good context there.
Yeah.
I remember sitting at Defense Language Institute learning Arabic, for example, in 2000. And at the time, I had no idea of how it was important, relevant. And 9/11 happened, and it's an understatement, right, to say that changed the trajectory of my life because our whole generation feels that.
For sure.
But that doesn't mean it's not true, right? Because that just set the series in place that had a profound formative impact on our lives, but I'll say especially in my life. For example, I think it was between 2003 and 2006, and a little bit of history, the Marine Corps had a pilot program called USOCOM Detachment 1. And a lot of legends that many in our community talk about come from that team. And they disbanded in 2006. I checked into 1st Marine Special Operations Battalion in 2006 at the formation when we were decommissioning 1st Force Reconnaissance. And I'll say that was a golden age of sorts because at the time, there wasn't anything. We didn't call ourselves Raiders.
Right.
We didn't call ourselves CSOs or SOCs, like Critical Skills Operators or Special Operations Capability Specialists. We were just expected to be good at whatever we were trained to do. And it was more about performance than titles and MOS titles and billets and names. And to be honest, we were all trained to be warfighters. So that period was very formative, very significant for so many reasons. The culture of toughness, the culture of mission accomplishment, innovation, which just paired with failure.
Right.
And it was special. So we could pull the string on that, like you said, all day long. But at the end of the day, the most significant part, and I think you'll see a trend in this, is that it's the relationships. But I think what we don't commonly say, it's that it's not just the people and the relationships and friendships and the brotherhood, but it's the men we lost.
Right.
It's even the broken relationships that are very significant during that time, because there's casualties to living a life that is so dedicated to warfighting.
Right.
It's definitely a thought experiment to explore if it's even compatible, right, with how we're called to live our lives naturally. But we do it, and it's okay, and we learn so much. So it was very significant. The people, definitely the people.
Yeah, you're right. I do hear that. I just want to sit for a moment with the thought, and maybe I'm just foot stomping it. I don't know. Because even when I think about my own service, I'm not a warfighter. I support the warfighter, or did. But in my singular focus, there have been, you know, like normal people, I feel like keep friendships, you know, and don't move away from home and things like that. You know, those some of the things that you give up to live that lifestyle. You're right. They are casualties. And it is different than other times in history when you wouldn't be expected to also kind of live a normal life and be in these other roles. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of dual and complex roles come up for today's warfighters. And I know that there's a lot of people that can identify with that. What do you think was most difficult for you? Also, like, impossible question, because I'm sure there were many, many difficult situations or scenarios, but.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, the most difficult part of all of that is when it all falls apart, right?
Yeah. What do you mean? I think
also, you spend so much time forming a heart and mindset of service, right? Where you're not working for a living, you're living to work against something that is so important, right? To take lives, save lives, hunt our nation's enemies, and protect my brothers and sisters, that it is very easy to wear that, right? And not even just wear it, but make it who you are.
Mm.
And that's okay. That's okay. I think it makes us very effective at what we do. But like you were mentioning, there's all these other roles that are casualties. It's not just people, but there's roles. And when I say the most difficult part is when it falls apart, is that, I mean, I think it's inevitable, but for me, it happened where I found myself in just a super low moment where I felt I sucked at everything.
Yeah. Right.
Like I failed at everything. I remember, and maybe this, I'm sure this resonates with a lot of guys. And like, I really remember the feeling of my own 45, right, against my tongue. And the feeling of it just shoved into the roof of my mouth. And I remember the taste of the CLP and the gunpowder. And I remember the sounds, you know, of this shouting match with my wife. And my daughter crying, probably thinking it's her fault. And you go through this moment in your head, man, I suck. I failed as a husband. I failed as a father. Maybe legitimately I would be doing them a favor. And then other stuff, minds start, like stuff comes in your head, like, man, and then, but I'm a Marine. I'm not doing this job. And but maybe I sucked at that too. Maybe I'm missing the mark on those roles. Maybe I didn't save enough of my brothers and sisters. Maybe we hunted down the wrong dude. Maybe we took too much life, or maybe it's not enough. Yeah. And then, you know, you just get to this really dark moment where it's like, then what's left?
Right.
Right. When it all falls apart, when all these roles and identities and hats, this uniform, whatever it is that you're wearing, when it all falls apart, what are you underneath? Like, are you anything permanent and eternal in that environment? And that is so tough to deal with. And whether you're in service or not, mm-hmm. in these transition moments of life,
mm-hmm. right,
where you are forced to reflect, you're going to get a new job. Even now, I'm working in defense tech right now. So eventually, one of these days, I'll go to another job. I'm going to get another job. We'll see that pattern until we figure out, you know, what's permanently there. I think we're constantly searching for that.
Yeah, and it's not like you weren't giving it your all. And so in your mind, well, it's not like I was not trying, but I feel like I didn't do a good job. And so I can't do better, you know, and then the thoughts start creeping in. They're subtle at first.
They are. And, yeah. and we kind of fool ourselves with work-life balance talk,
mm-hmm,
right? Because
mm-hmm.
it makes it sound algorithmic.
Right.
Like, I have to have this much.
Right.
This much.
Yep.
Or maybe, oh, you know what? I need to retire so I could focus on my family. Great. But do you know who you are still?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because you're gonna come back to that question. So, man, yeah, that was difficult. In that moment, and that was early, that was still in the middle of my career when I got to that moment.
How did you get past that? I mean, why did you not pull the trigger?
We're going into testimony here. At the time, something just happened into my just creeping in my mind and just distracted me. I put my gun down and then just kind of moved on with life. And I struggled for 7 years trying to rely on myself. For example, let me clarify. I spent the several years after that with a lot of self-help books being like, I'm going to figure this out.
Right.
So at the time I had orders out of the unit. So I was doing a bunch of mostly administrative stuff for Headquarters Marine Corps. And I'm like, okay, I have this time now. I'm going to figure it out on my own. I'm going to develop good habits like we're taught, you know, like I'm just going to develop good habits and I'm going to be disciplined at being creating touch points with my wife and my daughter. And I'm going to be good at these roles. Finally, I'm going to start focusing on these things. And I spent several years doing that. But that fell apart, right? Because it was hard. When you try to do things on your own, it's tough. Because it just feels like you never live up to those roles, even if you put all your focus and time on it. And then the trajectory of my life changed significantly in when I decided to stay in the Marine Corps, and really when I decided to come to North Carolina as a family. So I got to 20 years, I was going to retire, and then we just felt the calling. I felt the calling to come back to MARSOC. But MARSOC was on the West Coast. I'm like, okay, I've avoided North Carolina my whole life. Never really wanted to be stationed in Camp Lejeune.
Yeah.
No one wants to be in Jacksonville, but we just felt a calling and we actually moved to Hampstead, came back to MARSOC. But at the time, we cultivated a pretty good habit in my family of getting together for dinner and treating that as sacred time.
Mm-hmm.
And for extra context, we have never been a church-going family.
Mm-hmm.
Never been a church-going family. I think we were the typical where I acknowledge God's existence. I believe in him. I'm spiritual, right? I think that's common. I'm spiritual. Yeah, I'm spiritual. I believe in God. I acknowledge his existence. And then that's where it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
We get to North Carolina where there's churches all over the place, and we just happen to have these conversations about something a little bit more eternal. And my daughter, she was, how old was she at the time? This is 2021. So she's 14. She goes, hey, Dad, I think we should try out a church. Let's just try it out. And I'm like, okay, pull one up. I'm with you. Pull one up, look for one. And she pulls up Yelp. And she finds this negative review of a church called Renovation Church. She finds a negative review, and the negative review says, how dare these people gather on the beach to do baptisms as a big group during these times? How dare they? And I love that boldness. I'm like, that's the one. That's the one we're going to. And that faith story moves forward. But to answer your question, how did I move on? In retrospect, only in reflection, did I realize that at the time of my weakest moment, did God give me enough time?
Mm-hmm.
He distracted me with enough time. And to make it weirder, is at the time when I was literally in my closet near my gun safe with my gun in my hand, there was a Bible that caught my attention because I thought I lost it. When I deployed to Iraq the first time in 2004, it was my first Bible. I was like, you know, I better bring this with me because, you know, things are going to hit the fan. I was in Fallujah at the time. So I'm like, man, I need this. And I thought I lost it since then because I never touched it. But it just happened to be in the corner between my gun safe and the edge of the wall, like in my closet. And it just caught my attention enough where I had to stand up because at the time I was just sitting down on my knees. I stood up, picked it up, and set it down and didn't think about it again until the day I went back to church, like several years later, where I had to really look at my life and like, oh my gosh. And God was there. He had to have been there. And the more you pull on that string, you see God was there all along.
Oh yeah.
Like since I was born.
Right.
When I was in the womb. So yeah, man.
Well, how do you, it is amazing and it's weird and incredible and, you couldn't orchestrate it if you tried. Let's take it back though. I mean, adding what we know about your experience now into that like lost sense of self, what do you think you've learned I guess, in the last few years about kind of your own sense of identity. What might you have to offer the rest of us, right? Who are constantly, you know, trying to fill that.
Oh, that's good. When we went to church on that day, it was October 17th of 2021. And I have to give this context because it's important, is when we went into that church, there was just something about that experience that really hooked me. And it was on that day where I just raised my hand and received salvation in my heart. And salvation, for those who, it doesn't have to be abstract. It's really just submitting to the fact that I am flawed, I have sinned, but I'm going to accept it, submit to the idea, submit to the truth that I'm forgiven of all that. And I don't have to hold the shame and resentment because I am created by something bigger than myself that has such a bigger purpose for me. So when that happened, and as I was transforming, it just happened to be at the same time of me retiring, right? Things just started to fall in place. My wife eventually came in, and she has her own testimony, and that was just a miracle that she started coming to church with us. We attended a marriage coaching seminar, which was a whole nother approach because we've been to plenty. My daughter gets baptized on the beach the following summer. I get baptized. My wife raises her hand for salvation. I start getting involved in overseas missionary trips, which is
Who are you?
Amazing. Yeah, who am I, right? Like, and this is quick. 2021 right. Till now. I get involved, and this is what I'm trying to get to, is that I get involved in that ministry, but then I get involved in our teen and youth ministry, right? Where I'm being assigned 11th and 12th grade young men, right? 11th and 12th grade young men to disciple.
Hmm.
And we talk about, we're talking about identity. And it's just so important, and it's just amazing how these things have converged. So I just have to give that context.
Yeah.
Because identity, as you asked, we all know that it's important. I think that's very pragmatic. Identity is important because I need to know who I am in order to know what my purpose is. Mm-hmm. And that's very important. But I've learned through the experience that God gave me, right, through the struggle that God gave me, through that arena that he put me in to develop certain skills and habits and proclivities, I've learned that you can put on all these identities. But until you know who you are internally, like eternally and internally, can you really move forward, right, towards that purpose? It's just so important to know. For example, first of all, let's be real. In the soft community, especially in the Marine Corps soft community, we knock like conventional Marines. We just do. Just to be real. Like,
yeah.
Cookie cutter, everything is like covers good, everything. And we're like, we make fun of that. But when you look back, when I look back, at least for me, when I look back at my service, I am never I've never been as much of a motard. Like super moto Marine. I'm like, I got a couple red retirement hats, right? And that's great. And you can wear those, you can wear it all day long, but knowing who I am eternally is so important because those things are so temporary.
Mm-hmm.
They're so temporary because who you are really is the process, right? So check this out. I think people will go to image of God first when they talk about identity. But I've come at it from a whole nother, like I was blessed to come at it from a whole nother angle that at least makes sense for me and my family.
Yeah.
There's a piece of scripture. It's 1 John 4:8. 1 John 4:8 is whoever does not love does not know God because God is love.
Right.
And that sounds cool. It's three words. God is love. I'm like, oh, that sounds so cool. I believe that. Right. But what does that even mean?
Like, right. It does sound really good.
Yeah, it does. And then when you break it down and you're like, wow, well, to love is to care about someone so much that as if they are a part of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to ask, well, what if I don't love myself? It's like, well, And then you have to realize, well, you don't, it's not up to you. Like you are not the source of love.
Right.
You can't conjure it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with a lot of our society. You think you can conjure love, like you can create it. No, you have to receive it. You receive it from God. You mm-hmm. receive it from life. You mm-hmm. receive it from the existence we have. So if that's true, if I receive it, because it's a gift, it's not something I have to earn, it's not a reward.
That's right.
Right? If I receive it and I am the image of God, then I'm like this mirror that reflects it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just not, I'm not you. You live that out differently. So the real question is not about identity, because I know who I am. I'm the image of God. I am an image of God, a flawed one. But the real question is, how do you live out your identity?
Yeah.
Once you capture that I am flawed but forgiven image of God, that I can be imperfect and forgiven at the same time,
mm-hmm.
we should be asking ourselves, hey, how do you live out your identity?
Right.
How do you do it? And then, man, that's a whole other journey of exploration.
Yeah. I love awesome. That when we spoke last time, you and I were talking about identity, and we kind of came upon this, I think, agreement that it's like, it is expressed in relationship with other people.
It is. Right?
Like, it can't be done alone. So why are you trying to do it alone? Like, we were made. Yeah. Like you said, that mirror, like even that, okay, if you're going to be a reflection, well, someone else is seeing that, you know, so you're in relationship with at least another person, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think all the good traits in life, all the good parts of life, like joy, patience, caring, kindness, all have to do with someone else.
Right.
You're not going to be paid. Like, I mean, you could be abstract. Like, I could feel joy.
I'll wait all day long.
In a closed room by yourself, those things don't exist. Those things exist truly and practically in our life with other people.
Yes. Yes.
When we talk about our strengths, you know, something that I got to throw this plug in. The Honor Foundation was so formative in my transition.
They're so good. Yes. Throw all the plugs you want.
Oh, absolutely. And we learn about our strengths.
Mm-hmm.
So mine are, if I get them correctly, it's I'm strategic, I'm an achiever, I'm a learner, I'm connected, and I love feedback, right? That all has to do with other people.
Exactly.
That all my strengths have to do with other people.
Right.
And it's just so true. And I think we really need to like submit to that. And it's awesome.
Yeah. I want to shift just a little bit, because I've now been getting some new emails in my inbox, and they have your name on them. And it is some writing that you've been doing, and it's called Suffer Better, and people can, you know, subscribe and then be lucky like me and get these thoughtful things in their email. But clearly you've been through some things and you've made it through. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, the catalyst behind writing on this topic.
Yeah. Okay. I'll first say that it's a legit journal. Like, not a journal, like a published journal. It's an actual journal. So I've developed a journaling habit, like written by hand. And then sometimes when things are running through my mind, I'll go through my keyboard just because I could process information faster. And I share them out. Like if there's something that, like if there's a friend of mine, I'm like, man, I think he would connect with this because it brings up some good questions. I'll push it out to some friends. And one of my really close homies he told me like, man, I think you should just archive these publicly. Just do it. And so like, okay. And
friends I got are that so comment. Good.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. And so I'm like, okay, I'll do that. So I started doing that not that long ago. I called it Suffer Better because I think enduring suffering is a fundamental aspect of how we live.
Mm-hmm.
Like we endure those things in order to build perseverance, in order to develop our character, and to find hope. Like you need those things. You need mm-hmm. to wrestle with things. So I created that Substack. I don't know exactly how Substack works, but I created it And I started posting a couple things. And what I'm hoping is that you'll see struggle, that you'll see that wrestling with questions. And I'm hoping that, you know, people can engage with it. And if not, I'll still do it and archive it. But yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's not if, but when. I think we all suffer. At first, when you hear the word, it's like, oh, avoid at all costs. But we all suffer, whether it's, you know, internally or relationally. There's a million ways that we suffer. It's not a matter of if, but it's like, if I can have some tools on that, then that is practically helpful in the short term and eventually can make a huge difference in the overall impact and, you know, trajectory of your life. I know just hearing someone else's thoughts or story makes me feel less alone. It makes me feel like less of a failure. It makes me feel more normal. And all those things bring hope. So even though it has the word suffer in the title, I truly believe that it brings hope.
I think it does. Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, what I would hope as well is that we find these moments like this podcast where you do feel that you can go shoulder to shoulder with someone, be in their thoughts, learn from them, and do life together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that's essentially, I guess, what I'm trying to contribute to.
Right.
Is that effort.
Let's say, I know you're doing a lot. You're involved in a lot. Obviously, we're talking about your writing, what you're doing in ministry as far as, you know, missions trips and some mentoring and discipleship with youth. But let's say that someone listening to your story today, they have a desire of their own to contribute, you know, in a way that's bigger than themselves. They want to express their identity with others, right? And be in community somehow. They want to be active in relationships, but they don't know where or how to get started. Maybe they're still struggling. They don't know, they haven't been through a program that tells them their strengths and how to express those. What might be your advice for them?
Oh, wow. So there's a couple things to that. And it's a reflection of my own journey, I guess, is when I decided to join the service or one of the services, you kind of had to have to ask someone, do you desire to serve or are you going to join the service? Do you desire to do whatever in ministry or is this like a retreat for you? Right. Because I think we have to be honest with ourselves, but also give ourselves some grace into the fact that maybe I want a heart of service and I'm looking for an opportunity to develop that.
So good. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be real, like not everyone who joins the service, one of the military services, like I'm joining to serve.
Right.
To truly serve.
That's probably the weirder answer, to be honest with you. But yeah.
but I guess the thing I would say is that if you have the desire to go somewhere that has the title service in it, I think that's great. That's a great first step. The desire and the calling, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a great adventure and it's a great journey, but know that it's a formative journey. And it's a formative journey that is probably necessary for you to discover who you are. Right? But what I would caution is that you are not the journey itself.
Mm-hmm.
For example, practically, I am eternally and internally, I'm not a Marine. It is something that I did, but I am something more permanent eternally, right? As to who I am. And the journey that the Marine Corps gave me, and I'm very grateful, super grateful and humbled by all of that that's been given to me. And I still, once a Marine, always a Marine, but I'm not the journey, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. that's something that needs to be understood mm-hmm. by anyone who wants to join service.
Yeah, right? Because when you're full, when you're all filled up, when you're whole, the overflow is your greatest contribution. Mm. You know what I mean? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? Does that sound so weird?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. No. The overflow. Here's how you tell me if I'm wrong. The way I'm interpreting it is the overflow of receiving all this love, right? Because you receive this love, but you got to give it.
Yeah.
And the more you give, the more love you give, right? The more service you give, you know, you just start overflowing with it, and you got to start scaling, right? You're doing this podcast, for example, right?
So you
spend a lot of time doing this on one-on-one environments or doing it where it's scaled down, and you're just receiving all of a sudden, man, I got to do more.
Yeah.
I think God's calling me to reach more people. Have a podcast.
Right.
And I know I feel it because in my heart, and I constantly pray for discernment to ensure that I'm not doing it out of my own pride or my own self.
Yeah. Right. Like, you don't need the thing. The thing is just bursting forth from you.
Right. And that's what I think that's what that journal, the journal on Substack blog, whatever it's called these days, the blog, I think that's what that is. It's part of the overflowing, right? It's part of the overflow. So yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, you know, like going back to a major theme of we've been talking about this sense of identity and this human need to feel important, to feel seen, to feel like you have a part to play, you know, in the world. That is a great need. You're just saying, let's go ahead and fill the need with what actually satisfies. So you're all the way full, and the gifts you have, you can just fully bring without any strings attached. Well, this has been awesome. I hope that, I don't know, you've enjoyed, you know, this conversation. I know I did. Really? I've enjoyed meeting you and just having this connection. And I know people will be blessed by hearing from you and reading more from you. So I'll encourage them to do that in the show notes. For now, we'll close this conversation. I just want to thank you so much for your courage today and your willingness to come on and tell us more about yourself and what you've been thinking and learning lately.
Barb, thank you. I mean, this is what you're doing is a big deal, and I appreciate everything you're doing as well. And I know I'm not the only one. I mean, the questions, the focus on service, and how that translates over to other parts of our life. And how do we even get there? And this was a great exercise for me of going through these thoughts and reflecting. And I know it is for others. So thank you for what you're doing. This is awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another incredible episode of In the Name of Service. If you enjoyed today's episode, please like and subscribe. And of course, feel free to share with those you feel would like to be inspired. Have a difference maker in your life that you'd like to see featured? Reach out to Dr. Barb Thompson at inthenameofservice@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.